My name is Dr. Elliot Malamud.
Hello.
On behalf of Foreign Motion, we want to welcome you all to this panel discussion about racism, democracy, and certain issues that are taking place in Israel. I'm just going to give you a brief introduction to the issues. Since the founding stages of Zionism, there have been continuous discussions about the potential compatibility of a Jewish state with democracy. That issue was again brought into very sharp relief recently with the publication of a letter put forward by dozens of communal rabbis in Israel. The ruling would forbid the rental of homes to Gentiles, obviously aimed at the Arab populace, and was signed by, among others, the rabbis of Ramat HaSharon, Ashdod, Kiryat Gat, Rishon LeZion, Carmiel, Gedera, Afula, Naria, Herzliya, and Pardes Hana. This letter came just a few months after a similar psak din of Rav Shmuel Eliyahu, the chief rabbi of Tzfat. These rulings provoked a groundswell of opposition in many quarters and included protests regarding the fact that these rabbis were all on the public payroll. Rabbi Eliyahu's letter, which was published in mid-2010, reprinted in October, urged Jewish homeowners of apartments to reconsider renting their properties to Arabs since it would deflate the value of their homes, as well as those of their neighbors. The letter states, quote, "Their way of life is different than the Jews. Among them are those who are bitter and hateful toward us, meddle into our lives to the point where they are a danger." Unquote. The letter also as much as urges that Jews who defy this ruling, who don't accept the psak, should be warned and then placed in virtually in cheret, excommunication. Supporters of the ruling in the religious Zionist community included Rav Shlomo Aviner, who stated that, quote, "We don't need to help Arabs set down roots in Israel," unquote. Rabbi Yosef Scheinen, who is the head of the Ashdod Yeshiva, argued that the ruling has roots in the Torah itself. He says, "Racism originated in the Torah. The land of Israel is designated for the people of Israel, and that is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended," unquote. Now you should know that although the ruling was condemned by Prime Minister Netanyahu, by President Peres, by a whole host of other politicians and rabbis, it is noteworthy that in a recent poll conducted by the Harry S. Truman Institute for the Advancement of Peace at the Hebrew University, only a narrow majority of Israelis opposed the rabbi's call not to rent to Arabs. 44% supported the statement and 48% opposed it. Now, these letters are not isolated events. The very notion of how to deal with non-Jewish populaces within the land of Israel, especially in a country which is in a constant state of conflict with various enemies, is often the subject of heated debate within Israel. Another example, and we'll get to this a bit later, the publication in 2009 of Torah HaMelech, the King's Torah, which advocated the killing of any Gentile whose presence endangers Jewish lives, even if not on purpose, and included the statement that, quote, "There is justification for killing babies if it is clear they will grow up to harm us, and in such a situation they may be harmed deliberately, not only during combat with adults," unquote. So all of this directly raises the question of whether it's possible to run a Jewish state and still maintain democratic principles, and whether by definition, in order to survive, the state of Israel must engage in, not outright racism, some form of discriminatory policy. So to discuss all of these matters, we've brought together today three very well-qualified panelists. I'll introduce to you, at least across my screen from the left, begin with Rabbi Raphael Feuerstein, who studied for 8 years at Yerushalayim's Merkaz HaRav Yeshiva, where he received the Siicha. In 1996, Rabbi Feuerstein founded the Sohar Organization of Rabbis together with his colleagues, Rabbi David Stav and Rabbi Tzachi Lehman. The organization was established following the assassination of Prime Minister Rabin for the purpose of creating a common Jewish identity for Israeli society at large. In the year 2000, Rav Feuerstein was appointed community rabbi of the National Religious Community of Har Nof, Yerushalayim. The last 10 years has remained in this capacity. Moving across the screen, Rav Yehuda Gilad is the Rav of Kibbutz Lavi, and along with Rav David Bigman is the Rosh HaYeshiva of Male Gilboa. June 2002, Rav Gilad became a Chaver Knesset, where he served on the Education, Labor and Welfare Committee. He has earned recognition for his grassroots activism, promoting a Jewish and a democratic state, one without contradiction and without coercion from the religious establishment. On the far side, Rabbi Dr. David Meshuloff was ordained in 1968 by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. After earning his PhD in mathematics at Northwestern University, he made Aliyah in 1973 and subsequently earned a second doctorate in Talmud. He lectured at Bar-Ilan University for 14 years. Meshuloff writes, translates, edits articles, lectures widely in a variety of areas, has published numerous articles in the areas of Jewish law, Jewish thought, and education. Gentlemen, welcome. I want to begin with the first question. Let's begin directly with the Pesak Din of Rav Eliyahu and the subsequent letter by many communal rabbis. I'll start with Rabbi Meshuloff, and then each of you can jump in afterwards. The position of these rabbis is that Israel must practice, if not, say, gizanut, if not racism, and at least some form of maybe afla'ah, of discrimination. And that such discrimination is not only permitted, but is actually approved of by the Torah. Could you please offer your perspective on this?
Dr. Malamed, I'd like you to know, as well as my fellow panelists, that I was asked to sign that statement and refused for a variety of reasons, including my conviction that there was some misrepresentation of halacha there, including my conviction that it overemphasizes a position that would, as it did, would arouse considerable opposition and controversy unnecessarily, and by conviction that the problems that it addresses cannot be solved by pronouncing prohibitions. That said, I think it is one important distinction needs to be made here, and that is that you suggest that perhaps the Jewish state has to operate on discriminatory principles. That's a good question. But that question isn't related to this particular act. Here we have a group of rabbis speaking as they saw in the name of halacha and saying that for individual Jews, they should not do harm to their neighbors and their neighborhoods by selling or renting to non-Jews who do not belong in their neighborhoods. They were not suggesting a national policy, and I think that's an important distinction. One last comment before we come back around. Although I did not sign, and still would not sign, I don't regret that I didn't sign, nevertheless, I must acknowledge that, actually not I have to acknowledge, but in fact, many rabbis who opposed that statement acknowledged that there are foundations in Jewish law for the argument, the position that was taken by those rabbis. I would go even further, although I perhaps later will go even further in my opposition to the statement. But first let me say, not only are there solid grounds for that position in Jewish law, there are also solid grounds for taking extreme positions. I noted to myself a number of precedents where halakha has been consciously misrepresented for the purpose of strengthening a position. In Orach Chaim, there is a chapter, a siman, devoted to a list of fast days that were customary, apparently, from the early Middle Ages. the paragraph begins with, these are the days when it is forbidden by Torah law to eat. The commentators ask immediately, but Torah law forbids eating only on Yom Kippur. One of the answers is, they said it's forbidden by Torah law so as to strengthen the position. About 100 years ago, there was a problem of intermarriage. No, excuse me. There was a problem of innocent Jewish women being abandoned by their traveling husbands in Egypt. And in an attempt to stop that problem, the chief rabbi of Egypt had announced on Yom Kippur in all of the Bate Knesset, all the synagogues, that if any woman were to marry a man in a private ceremony, so that her parents really wouldn't know what was going on, then they would cancel the force, the legal force, the Jewish halachic legal force of that marriage. They knew they were on thin grounds, and yet they say, happily, after we made that dramatic announcement on Yom Kippur, when all the Jews of Egypt were in the synagogues, the problem stopped. So sometimes rabbis do choose to make very dramatic statements, even partly inaccurate, so as to have an effect. Again, I didn't share that view this time, but I understand the position of those rabbis who did act as they did, and I think later we'll discuss how one could deal with the problems that they're facing.
Thank you. Rav Gilad, two things. Number one, were you asked to sign this letter? And number two, on the grounds of halakha and Jewish values, what do you think of this letter?
Well, first of all, I think it's in my eyes, it's quite obvious that I have to oppose this kind of statement as a rabbi, as a Jew, and as a human being. I think before we start to speak about the halachic discussion about this, in my eyes, it's very, very important to emphasize what I believe is one of the main fundamentals of the Torah. Based in the words of Rav Kook, the Tzali says that basically it cannot be contradiction between the basic natural and universal morality and halakha, and we have to try to find any way to prevent this kind of contradiction. So before even I open a book of halakha to hear this kind of psak halakha that says that we are not allowed to sell or to rent apartments to non-Jewish person, I think first of all I have to oppose it as a human being. Obviously, if someone would have published this kind of statement in anywhere in the world against Jews, we were the first ones that we were against it, and we would have said that it is discrimination and anti-Semitism, etc. So first of all, מה ששנוא עליך לא תעשה לחברך. And I think this is the basic morality that we have to take into consideration as a basis. But even though afterwards, as we are committed to halakha, we have to start to read to learn the sugya of lo techonem, the sugya in the Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah. And as we know, one of the explanations in the Gemara to the forbidden lo techonem, that you are not allowed to sell property to non-Jewish or to Aved Avodah Zarah in Eretz Israel, according to Rov, the majority of the Rishonim relate to Aved Avodah Zarah. Some of them say even just it's related to the Shivat Amei Knan. So it's a big machloket about it, a big dispute about it, and most of the opinions say that it relates to someone that is idol worship, Aved Avodah Zarah. But even more so, I think that even the psak of the halakha not relate to our situation in our day, because this halakha didn't relate to a situation that we have a Jewish and democratic state. And as being a state that is a part of democratic of the whole world, we have commitment that we took upon ourselves in the Megillat Ha'atzmaut, in the Declaration of the Independence of Medinat Israel, of the State of Israel. And one of the things that I always say, quote, my father-in-law, Rav Amital, Zichrono Livracha, says that the obligation that Medinat Israel took upon ourselves in the Declaration of the Independence of the State of Israel has halachas halachic validity, because there is a question of chilul Hashem and kiddush Hashem. When we took upon ourselves this kind of commitment, it means that we have to keep it. So I think it's a great chilul Hashem, this kind of sakalacha, and therefore I think it's wrong halachically and morally, and we have to stand against it. Even though I have to say that there is a real problem, as someone that lives in the Galil, and as maybe some of you know, in the Galil, the Arabs are the majority in our days, and we have to find a way how to keep the majority of Jews in all the state of Israel. We have to find a way how to deal with the problem of cities and neighborhoods that the Arabs are buying the properties. But we have to do it in a clever way, in a moral way, and not using the halakha in order to deal with this. I think it's a national problem. We have to deal with it at a national level, and therefore I think it's a very wrong, it's a very bad pesak halakha, and we have to try to condemn it. I think it's a distortion of halakha. We have to try to say it in the most clear way that we just can.
Mr. Feuerstein, would you like to comment on the letter itself and your view?
Yes. I would say that I would like to touch the to add to the things that were said before is the question, first of all, to understand that there is a real dilemma. I myself, for example, somehow disagree a little bit with the, I would say, with the way that Rav Gilad was shaping his words. I agree with him on the outcome, but I would say that also in all my presentations in the media during, and I had many during this when the letter came out, I said, let's not call it racism. Because it's not racism. I don't think it's racism. Means, if Rav Gilad, let's be honest, if Rav Gilad says, I would like, and not just Rav Gilad, it's the JNF, it's I would say that we have today a ministry in the government of Israel, which is the Ministry of Negev Vagalil, which its agenda is to bring so many Jews and economy to the Negev and to the Galil. So, it's not racism to say, I am making the Galil and the Negev more filled with Jews. That's not racism. In this, from this point of view, what they said was another, they added another, I would say, block or another level to the main thing. You know, if you say, I'm preferring, if Israel is it's the state of all citizens, why do you, why is it a problem that the Galil is full with Arabs? If Arabs are equal to Jews in Israel, why should the JNF give lands to Israel, to Jews, and not to Arabs who are also citizens in the country? So I think that in the end of the day, everyone agrees that the mission of Medina Yehudit is to give priority to the state, to Jews in the state of Israel, and Rav Gilad said it. So I wouldn't say that the letter is racism, and I think that the letter, and the letter which I'm against, and I was talking very clearly in writing against the letter, is not a racist letter. It's not, I would say, immoral letter. It's a stupid letter. Means it's not immoral in the sense that if we are real democracy, let's be equal. We are not equal. The only question is, and here we have to understand that we are living in a dilemma. It's very, the Israeli citizen is in a very hard situation. He's fighting against Arabs. He has to live with them together. The Israeli Arabs are more and more and more identifying themselves as Palestinians. Less and less and less, the politicians are less and less and less identifying themselves with the state of Israel. Means that the Israelis have today a very big dilemma how to deal with the neighbors which are part of themselves, part of the state. On the other hand, are part of a nation which is today in a situation of fighting against Israel. That's the situation, and it's a very problematic situation. That's my beginning point to this question. So I said, when they say we want to sell our homes too, and we want the neighborhoods to be Jewish, I can understand it. But why I am against it? I'm against it, first of all, because I'm against of using halacha for political issues. Means, lo techonem, there was a misuse of halacha, and I think it's, I think that's a, first of all, a very important mistake. Why do I say it? Because no one of those people who signed the letters are against to sell land to Arabs in Umm al-Fahim. The state of Israel has to give lands for Arabs, and they have to build their buildings. The faith grows in their villages, so the state of Israel will give them and should give them. And I didn't see in the letters that somebody says, from now on, let's not give the Arabs any more piece of land in the country. No one says it. So if you come from standpoint of Lot Echonem, you have to be consistent and say no one piece of land. No one says it. By the way, if Lot Echonem is relevant to Arabs, you have to say that you are not allowed to give them to build another stage, another floor on existing field. You don't let them to close a whatever. I mean, so it's not coming from Lot Echonem. Second, if you say Lot Echonem, then you have to continue not to sell an apartment to a Russian immigrant who is not Jewish. Means, before you sell any apartment or you rent apartment to somebody, you have to ask me, please show me your ketubah of your parents. I want to see, you know, like we make before we marriage, we marry couples, we want to see if the both of them are Jewish. We want to see, show me that you are Jewish. If not, I don't rent you. No one said, let's not give it to people who came from Russia or non-Jew. So I don't like, and I disagree, to make a misuse of halakha, who can say, I want the Galil to be Jewish, and that's okay, that's still something which we can say. So, first of all, it's not racism, but it's a misuse of halakha. Second point is that I think that rabbis should be more sophisticated. We, from one side, we have a problem, we face a problem. And Arav Gilad mentioned it. He lives there more than me. He sees it, I think, daily, what's happening in the Galil. And he knows it better than me, that there is a problem. He mentioned it. But the question is, how do we do it? Do we do it in a way that we fight against people which we have to live with them together? Or we look for solutions which give them the rights, but gives us the opportunity to make the Galil more Jewish, and Tzfat more Jewish, and Akko more Jewish, etc. And I'm afraid from the voice, from the music which came out from the letter, which began to be anti-Arab, and not to educate our communities to more sophisticated a relationship with people who are part of the state and will be part of the state. And on the other hand, we still want to see the Galil more Jewish, etc. That's a contradiction. And I think that rabbis should understand the situation where we live in today in our country, and to be more sophisticated and to be less, very, you know, less to the extreme. And I have to tell you that one of the things which my sensitive ears I heard in the radio is that today there is a bill in the Knesset, a Vadot Kabbalah bill, means it's a bill which gives power to every Jewish village to decide who will be the people who live there, and to decide that some people who are Arabs cannot rent or build a house in this. And I heard in my sensitive ears that the Knesset members who pushed this bill took it back to relearn it after the letters of the rabbis. What I feel is that the letters of the rabbi created a situation where today it's much less easy to say, I want to see the Galil more Jewish. Now, they, because of the reaction which came anti their letter, it's very hard to say it. Means, you have to be not just to be right, you have to be smart. And that's my main issue in this letter, and the feelings, the negative feelings which are coming out. Don't talk negatively. If the rabbis would say, let's find budgets, let's find foundation, let's bring more young couples to Tzfat, I'm poor, I'll help them, everyone will help them. But when you talk negatively and you create negative feelings, I think they risk the very sensitive balance which we try to build here in Israel.
Thank you. Did either of you want to follow up, or Meshulav, or Gilad?
It seems to me that we are pretty much in agreement about the letter and its lack of wisdom and the complexity of the halachic issues that it addressed, and perhaps the fact that we are dealing with issues that are not really halachic and should not be presented as such. So perhaps, Dr. Malamed, you would like to lead us on to looking at those issues rather than focusing too much on this letter. The fact is that even one of the initiators of the letter, Rav Shmuel Eliyahu of Tzfat, has since signed a different letter, much more moderate, in which he and other rabbis state that the point is not to invite into Jewish neighborhoods hostile elements. It's a whole different story. Even that might not be a good idea, again, as Rav Feuerstein points out, that emphasizes the negative. There are wiser ways to speak. Nevertheless, there has been a certain retraction of the letter. Perhaps we should move on to discuss other issues.
Sounds good. So I'd like to take the discussion then into a larger area, if I may. What was interesting to me about this letter, about other similar calls, there was the letter by the women and Lahava about Jewish workers not getting involved with Arab romantic partners. All of these different issues point to me the question of whether it's truly possible in the long run to maintain strict democratic principles with an emphasis on a Jewish state. And I'm curious, I want to throw out to each of you a hypothetical idea, and I want to see what you think about this idea. Let's say that in years to come, the Arab population of Israel outnumbers the Jewish population, somewhere down the line. And the government is therefore headed up by an Arab list. And let's say that such a government decides that it's in the best interests of the state of Israel not to fund Jewish education or any kind of Zionist project. You see where I'm going with this. So how should Torah Jews in Israel and outside react to this? In other words, if we really let democracy run its course fully, and we engage fully with what democracy means, what does that mean, ultimately, for the state of Israel? And in fact, when you look at something like the law of return, isn't there already some kind of institutional afla'a discrimination that's already going on? So isn't the question really, how do we balance off discrimination with democracy? Let's start with Rav Gilad.
Yeah, I would say that for me, Medinat Israel being Jewish and democratic, both these two elements are very, very important to in my eyes, and I'm not ready to give up each of them. And I know that in both extreme sides, in the secular and in the Haredi and in the religious side, on the other side, there are people that try to say that it cannot be together, it cannot work together, being Jewish and democratic. But I insist, and I think this is the opinion of the vast majority of the population of Israel, that we should be Jewish and democratic, and there is no contradiction between these two elements. The only law that I can see slide, and I disagree with the first, and I don't think that we justify discrimination within the state of Israel. The fact that I want that Galil will be Jewish, if it will be done in a moral and democratic way, I don't think it's discrimination. The only law, as you have said, is the law of return, and this is not a law that relates to the situation within the state of Israel. This is the criteria how to get into the state of Israel, and as we know, every state, many states all over the world, they have some rules, what is the way that they will let people go into the state. And therefore, I think the religious justification, the Jewish history, and mainly the Holocaust, and all the tragedies of Jewish history justify this kind of rule that will say that we will prefer Jews in the entrance of Medina Israel. This is the only discrimination that we can find by law in the state of Israel. I'm not trying to say there is no discrimination before in the ground. Unfortunately, and I feel ashamed about it. I think it shouldn't be. I think it's against, not just against democracy, it's against being a Jewish state, because in my eyes, being Jewish is ben ashar, kager ka ezrach, ra'abtem et hager, kigrem item eret Mitzrayim, the right of the non-Jewish population in Israel. I feel committed to them, not just because I'm a democratic, but because I want a Jewish state as well. And therefore, I would have to say that we have to make all the efforts to keep these two elements to live together, Jewish and democratic. And I think we are doing a mistake, I think moral mistake, and it's stupid, as our person said, the way that we deal with the problem, not just in this area of the letter of the rabbanim, of the rabbis. Just for example, the discrimination of funding the villages and the population in the state of Israel is not a secret. And I think that if our government was clever enough to give the funds to the Arab cities, they wouldn't have tried to go to live in Tzfat and Afula and Carmiel. The problem is that they don't have modern neighborhoods in Nazareth or in Yafia or in Taipe or in other places. And therefore, some of them find the only way to improve their conditions of life is to live in Jewish neighborhoods. So this is a way that is both clever, just an example, that both clever and moral to put more money in the Arab population in order to prevent this kind of problem. So I must tell you, the picture that you described, I feel it's not. I hope and I pray that it will not happen. For me, I must tell you, it will be a tragedy. For me, the dream of Jewish state, if it will be majority of Arabs here, and we will live as a minority, for me, some of the value of the state, I'm losing the main value of the state. Because for me, living in a state, in the state of Israel, is not just living in Eretz Israel, but living in a Jewish Medina, a Jewish sovereignty, Ribonut. And without it, I think I have to give up part of my dream, and I do as best as my ability to prevent this kind of situation in a moral way, in a clever way. And I think we don't have to threaten ourselves in this kind of dramatic pictures. We have to try to prevent it, to do it in a clever and in a moral way.
Thank you. Rav Feuerstein, do you believe that some form of discrimination is necessary in order to maintain the Jewish character of the State of Israel?
Yes. Here I disagree with my dear friend Rav Gilad. I prefer to be more, you know, you can bring the words together and somehow play with the words and say there is no contradiction. You know, the law of return, let's be honest, is it very, it's not a little law. It means that if I have a family, if I'm an Arab, and I have a family somewhere in the world, I cannot bring them. I cannot say, you know, it's for us the issue of Aliyah. I don't have to tell you what does it mean to have Aliyah, how important it is for the in the families, in the family, in the individual level, and in the national level. It's not a little law. It's a very meaningful law. So I wouldn't say, you know, democracy and the Jewish state of Israel live together very nicely. I would say more than that. It's, as you said, Rav Gilad, it's a known secret. The budgets are not going equally. And the fact that you say, I'm not happy that the Galil, we have more Arabs than Jews, that's I don't know how to call it. It's not exactly democracy. It's not Medinat Kol Ezracher. I'm against the term of Medinat Kol Ezracher. The state belongs totally to its citizens without to make a difference if it's Jews or Arabs. No, I think it's a Jewish state. And now you can say it's not racism because I'm not against the Arabs. I want to build my own country. But it's not, from the other hand, I cannot say it's democracy. But let's come to the point. So in this point, I prefer to be honest and to say, I don't, the world, we try to balance with them. We try to be as much democratical after we ensure the fact that Israel will be a Jewish state. That's okay, I can agree with it. But here, I would say that the picture is not so bad. Why? Because you, I'm talking now with Toronto. It's very nice. I don't think that you live in Quebec exactly. Am I right? From what I learned about the way the French-speaking people or French-originated people were treated in Quebec, which universities, how much money was put there, etc., etc. I think you can teach us more how exactly was there a really equal rights to the French and to the English origin people. I think that the secret is again known. The law which we find now in French against the Reala, I don't know how to call it, the Arab, the Muslim women who are not allowed, how do you call it? To cover the face, you know.
Niqab.
Yeah. Okay, again, what is it exactly? The Basques. Means, I think the world today struggles with the question of how to deal with, from one side, multicultural society, and from the other side, to keep France as France, the law in Switzerland against the masks. What is it exactly? Is it democracy? If I'm a Muslim citizen in Switzerland, can't I express my feelings in the way I want? The answer is no, you are not allowed. So I think the world today struggles. That's why I yes agree with Arav Gilad. In the sense, I wouldn't say there is no contradiction. Yes, there is contradiction. But are we alone in this game? Totally not. I think that's today the Western world is struggling with the question of how to be democratic from one side, and from the other side, how to keep his identity, his original identity. And I think that our solution is not so bad, I would say, in this contradiction which exists. I yes agree totally with Arav Gilad that I think that we should do more things toward the Arabs. I'm part of an institute which is called the Forestian Institute, and we try to do as much we can toward bringing educational tactics and strategies inside the Arabs. And I agree totally with Arav Gilad that I'm ashamed to see, and I think it's not just a shame, but we make strategical mistakes. Instead of creating more connections and more understanding, we create more enemies, and I think it's a very bad way, and very short way, very limited way to think about the future of our existence here, and not a strategical one.
Thank you,
Dr. Malamed.
I'd like you to comment on the same issues.
Yes.
I'd like you to comment on.
Thank you for waiting while I was gone momentarily. You asked such electrifying questions that my circuit breaker jumped and I was off the air briefly. I'm glad to be back with you. When I came to Israel some 37 years ago, I spoke to whomever I could about the injustices that were being done by discriminatory budgets to Arab towns and villages by the Labour government that was then in power. And I was rather shocked by the strong critical words that were addressed to me about my disloyalty to Jews and to the Jewish state by speaking of the need to fairly and properly and equitably budget our Arab communities and our Arab citizens as well. That problem has continued. I'll tell you, I think that the problem then was not a religious problem. The discrimination was not instituted by a rightist or by a religious government or under the guidance of rabbis. That was done by a socialist government and a secular government. And I think it's still true that a very high proportion of the problems we have in Israel that you might want to identify as racist have nothing to do with Jewishness, with halacha, with rabbis, with Jewish religion. They have to do with genuine problems we are facing, as Rabbi Feuerstein has pointed out, that the Western world faces. I think Rabbi Feuerstein gives the Western world more credit than it deserves. I don't think that they are dealing with this problem, and I don't think that they are addressing it in terms of, I don't think they're addressing it honestly in terms of national needs versus equality and so forth, I rather suspect that we are one of the few countries in the world that address this issue from a moral perspective. We have been doing so more and more as more and more religious Jews and rabbis have gained a voice over the years, and I think this is very much to our credit. I think we're doing it better than others in very many ways. This very debate is taking place against the background of a variety of opinions among rabbis. I heard yesterday, I believe, that Professor Ruth Gabazon, who was formerly the head of the Israeli Civil Liberties Union, spoke just last week about the importance of maintaining free speech in our country for all views, even ones that we don't like, including views of rabbis, and she spoke in favor of rabbis being allowed to express their views. And again, although I didn't sign, and I don't agree, as my colleagues here also have not agreed, each one in his own way, with that letter, nevertheless, I would certainly defend their rights to speak as they did, and the rest of us to say, look, it's foolish, it's wrong, it's immoral, it's misguided, or whatever you might want to say. But they also have the right to speak up, and there also is some foundation for what they have to say. Two more points, and then I'll hand the ball back to you, Dr. Melamed. First of all this talk about the problems in the Galil is true, but Galil is far from the only place where there are problems. We have problems in Yafo, in the heart of our country, right next door to Tel Aviv. Just a week ago on Shabbat, there were a couple of hundred of young people who came to Yafo to celebrate Shabbat Shira together with the yeshiva group that, and the Garim, the Torah group that is now strengthening the position of Jews in Yafo. And as they walked through the streets singing on Shabbat during the day, not during night hours, they were spat upon, they were cursed, rocks were thrown at them by the Arab residents of Yafo. One of my daughters has bought into an apartment project in Yafo where more than 60% of the population is already Jewish, but the opposition raised to that apartment project by the Arabs of Yafo is immense. So our problems are not only in the Galil. They are, of course, the Negev, which hasn't been mentioned, but they are all over Israel. And one final point, and I'll hand back the gavel to you. As we try to look at the broader picture and deal with the question of how we are to have a Jewish state and yet a democratic and a moral and ethical and equitable one, I would like to turn to our Jewish people throughout the world. You know, the Talmud reports a meeting between Reish Lakish in the 2nd century, the 3rd century, and a Jew who came from Babel, who gave him his hand to help him come out of the river. And Reish Lakish, who was the head Dayan at that time, refused to take his hand. He said, God hates you. Speaking of dramatic statements, he said to his fellow Jew who had come from Babel, God hates you. He hates you, Jews of Babel, because you've stayed out in Babylon. You didn't come on Aliyah. You didn't come to strengthen our population, our numbers, our economy, our spiritual lives. You did not come, and that's why ultimately we lost our second temple, and that's why we've been crushed by the Romans, and that's why we're suffering as we are today. So I would like to call upon you Jews outside of Israel and remind you, this state is the state of all of the Jewish people. Rabbi Soloveitchik said many years ago, God is knocking on the door and presenting an opportunity to the Jewish people to come home, to come back to Israel. Now, we want a Jewish state full of Jews. Now, we can't do it all by ourselves. We want more and more Jews to come from outside of Israel to come home. We're building an infrastructure, we're building a society, a healthy society. We want you to come home. If you will come home in large numbers, larger than you have in the past, many of these problems will become history. Thanks.
Well said, although I suspect that en masse Aliyah is still a ways off, as historically it has always been. I wanted to ask all of you a question that I think plays in the minds of those, shall we say, on the right, Hayamin. Many people have argued that the reason that we need some form of discriminatory practice towards the Arabs is to counter or to balance off the reverse, which is the sort of forms of racism that are practiced towards Jews. For instance, that any future Palestinian state would apparently be Judenrein, would be free of Jews, or that in places like East Jerusalem or Hebron or other places, Jews undergo great harassment on the part of Arabs, as though they have no right to live there. So those people on the right will argue that in a sense there's a double standard in Israel, that especially on the left, that when it comes to violation of Arab civil rights, there's a lot of noise, but when it comes to the violation of the rights of Jews to live anywhere in Israel, there's a lot of criticism. So I'm wondering, and here I'm simply rehearsing an argument that I'm sure all of you are very familiar with, that you've heard many times. So I'd like some reaction to this particular dilemma. We'll start with Rav Gilad.
Yeah, I think the Torah teaches us through many, many sukkim in the Torah and the Nevi'im that we should be different. We shouldn't adapt the standards of morality of the other goyim. Obviously, we can find it in many fields. The ways that we have to fight to survive. If Chas v'Shalom, we would have adapted the standards of morality of our neighbors, we know which kind of things they are doing in killing innocent people, bombing buses in the middle of towns, etc. I think part of being Am Zgula is that we have read in this week parasha, "Atem Tiyulim Amlechet Kohanim Beit Kadosh Zgula Mikol Amim," is being example to the world, and therefore we have to take upon ourselves standards of morality that are higher than other places. I really believe that there is no a moral army all over the world, including the United States and other states, that in our situation, that have to fight in order to survive. We have to fight with such a black forces, with terror, with people that they don't have any restrictions, any limitations with their, in the way that they fight against us. And we are doing it in the most moral way. This is what we are. This is one of the justification of having three states in my eyes. I think, what does it mean? When the Nevi'im speak, let's say, in the time of the redemption, in the time of the Geulah, all the Goyim will come and will learn Torah from us. Which Torah they will learn from us? They will learn from us how to keep Shabbat, how to keep Kashrut. Obviously, they will learn from us the standards of morality. They will learn from Tzedek or Mishpat. This is the way that we have chosen. When Hashem chose Abraham, it says, "Ki da'ativ, neman asher etaved, bana, bebitua achara, v'shamu derech Hashem, la'asot tzedakah u'mishpat." Justice and morality and being moral, this is the main standard that we have to talk to take upon ourselves. And therefore, nachon, it's true, the Arabs, they don't treat us in a right way, and the Palestinian state, they will demand. I'm not sure that we have to agree with that, with this. Maybe we have to disagree with this, that the Palestinian state will be Judenrein. But obviously, I and you and any Jew cannot buy property in Umm al-Fahem or in Taibe or in Sakhnin or another place. They will not allow do it. But we are different, and there is another point. We are the majority. The force is in our hands. We cannot ignore minority and majority. Being moral in the time that we didn't have a force, in the time of the Galut, when we didn't have an army and state and the police, it's not a kunt, it's not a chokhmah gdola. To be moral when you don't have power. The main challenge of morality, of being Jew, is as Rashi told us, "Vayira Yaakov bat vayeter lo, vayira Hashem yehareg, vayeter lo Hashem yehareg." When Yaakov came to fight against Esav, he was afraid not just from the possibility that he will be killed, but from the possibility that he will kill others as well. This is, in my eyes, being Jewish. This is a Jewish state, in my eyes. This is the main challenge of being in power nowadays. And therefore, I agree that the Arabs don't live in our standard of morality, and I'm very proud about it. I will never, never, ever will be ready to give up this advantage, the moral advantage that we have. And this is, as I said, part of being Jewish in my eyes.
Rav Feuerstein, could you please comment as well?
Look, I totally agree with Rav Gilad. Can you sharpen a little bit the point? I mean, I agree. Our dream is to... please.
In other words, the point here...
I agree
is,
as well.
Let's make it a
I think our dilemma is...
So... I mean,
our dilemma is how
so
to be so open-minded... Go ahead. Our dilemma is we want to be as open-minded as possible, but not so open-minded that our brains fall out. We don't want to be so liberal and moral as to cease to exist. And this is our dilemma. And I think Rabbi Gilad and Rabbi Feuerstein have both spoken about that dilemma. We have a genuine dilemma. We are genuinely struggling with it.
It seems to me that the all of these issues lead to practical political considerations, which is where I think a book like Torah HaMelech comes in, where eventually, you know, I think everybody here agrees that Jews want to be moral, and yet at the same time, Jews want to survive. But the real issue comes when you see potential areas of tension between the desire to be moral and the desire for survival. After all of the ink that was spilled about the Gaza conflict a couple of years ago is essentially organized around that tension, the tension between morality and survival. My question is that since Rav Meshulam, you point out that this was not originally a religious thing, that the government itself was practicing a form of institutionalized racism, doesn't this suggest that in many ways Israelis on the ground are, in a way, tend towards the idea that we should worry more about our survival and a little less about being sort of fine points of morality? That's number one. Number two, people on the right argue that we especially should care less about morality when there's a double standard being practiced. We should be less concerned about the rights of the Arabs and more concerned about the rights of others. Anyway, I'm just rehearsing the argument for you here. I'm sure this is not an argument that's unfamiliar to you. And those were my two points, Rabbi Feuerstein.
It's a question of balance in my point of view. I mean, it's a really educational, it's a very complicated educational target which we face. How and I admire the society which I'm part of, and I agree with Rav Mishlov about his words, and the way that we try to have both sides. I mean, to understand that we have enemies and we have to fight, and on the other hand, we have to live together and we have to keep the rights. And in the end of the day, I think it's a matter of a balance. I am afraid that the situation, the political situation and the security situation is leading some of us, some of our rabbis and thinkers, to a point which they see just one side and they are not sophisticated enough to see the total picture, the total strategical picture. And I think it's something in the atmosphere, in the climate. It's very hard today. כתוב, it's written in מסכת סוטה, ואנשי, that in דקפית עד המשיכה, ואנשי הביניים לא יכוננו. People who are in the middle will face very hard times. And I think it's more than just democracy and Jewish identity of the states of Israel. I can see it in many different other different conflicts, like לימודי חול and לימודי קודש. I can see it in so many zones of conflicts, which are far from the conflict which we talk now about. I can see how hard it is to give as a rabbi, as a thinker, as a leader, to try to articulate a sophisticated a statement which tries to cover the different sides of the dilemma. And we are more in a either or, in a zero sum game play, where you have to identify yourself very clearly: are you here or are you there? And you cannot see in the reality. And this leads me to I think that our issue is today, and that's I'm afraid to say, I think that there were two great thinkers in our Jewish life in the, I would say, last generation: Arav Kook, which was older, and Arav Soloveitchik. And I think both of them, from two different perspectives, understood the spiritual life are built from, that our spiritual life are built from contradictions, and they knew, and they gave different solutions, but how a contradiction between two values could be a fruitful step of growth. For Arav Kook, if I put very shortly the schema, two contradictory sources of power who contradict can create a third power which is built from both of them. And he showed in different areas of our life how, for example, he was talking about the contradiction between liberal values and more national values. And he would say the third power should be national but with liberal sensitivity. It should show how could you be national and prioritize your identity and your nation, but from the same side as something which leads you to love other nations and not to hate them. That's a very unsimple spiritual and value and moral statement, where you can see both sides, and both sides contribute to each other instead of fight to each other. And this way of thinking, he could use this paradigm and this way of thinking on many, many different conflicts. Arav Soloveitchik would talk more about the dialectical situation, where you live with a contradiction. You have to know how to live with a contradiction. But if I see the common between those great thinkers, Arav Kook Zatzal and Arav Soloveitchik Zatzal, they both taught us how to live with contradiction. I have to say that in what I see today in Israel and in the diaspora, I see many more than Orthodox rabbis and many religious Zionistic rabbis create more movements, either to the, I would say, Haredi side or more to the liberal side. And I think it's hardly, much more harder to find deep people and deep rabbis and deep thinkers who understand that life, and I'm talking about deep life, I don't talk as a politician now, talking from a spiritual, moral, Torah values, that you have to understand how to make from a contradiction and a question a way of life which brings you to a better a stage of life. And that's, if you want, the wide picture. It's not just this specific and concrete question which we deal with, it's much more broad.
If we are to address the broader picture, I would suggest that we can now see that there are more than two opposite extremes that require some kind of resolution, either ala Rav Kook Zatzar or ala Rav Soloveitchik. We have an entire spectrum of views, and we find that they all exist within the Torah world. I think that there is something, again, going back in a sense to where we began with that letter, there's something that all of us and colleagues of ours can do to improve the situation in this sense here in Israel. And that is, besides finding the synthesis, which is the solution, and besides one person learning how to carry within himself the opposite sides and the synthesis, rather all of us learning to speak to each other and to listen to each other. Before my father, Allah Shalom, passed away 2.5 years ago, he got my brother and me to be members of the Rabbinical Council of America. Shortly after we joined, the Rabbinical Council of America established an internet forum which now has some 900 rabbis who participate actively in ongoing discussions of every possible issue, halachic, hashkafic and all things in between as well, questions of policy and so forth, and the range of views is tremendous. But we find, second, we've had a few rough moments, but we've gotten past them, and we find that the Rabbanim listen to each other respectfully. Now, when I was asked to sign that letter, and I did not agree to, that particular evening, another one of the rabbis at that meeting came to tell me that he would like to establish such a forum for us rabbis in Israel. And he and I have been discussing the possible ways to do that, and I hope that within the next several weeks our discussions will progress, and that we will find that instead of Rabbi Gilad writing to the public that he's ashamed now that he bears the title rabbi, seeing what another rabbi has done, and instead of one or another or a third rabbi speaking only his view without hearing the others, Rabbi Lichtenstein castigating other rabbis from his ivory tower of his purely Jewish wealthy community, yeshiva community where he lives, and castigating rabbis who face serious problems in the Galil and elsewhere, instead of that kind of discussion taking place only in the public forum, I think we would gain a great deal if we would learn to speak to each other. And I've taken part in such interesting discussions of public issues in recent weeks also, in which with some 30 or more rabbis on the list who have in fact raised different aspects of crucial current issues. And I think that if we will move in this direction, we will go way beyond where we were just a few months ago when this controversy began, and we'll go way towards what Rav Feuerstein is suggesting, that is, that we can deal with these problems looking at the different sides together, turning them over, and seeing if we can't come to some kind of modicum agreement as to how to deal with the different aspects in cooperation simultaneously. Thank you.
Thank you. Rav Gilad, I want to ask you one last question. I know you have to go. I'm wondering what the atmosphere is like in the religious Zionist community in Israel regarding issues like this letter, especially in the wake of the Hitnat Kutz, whether you find that people's ability to do what Rav Meshulav is talking about, to listen to one another, to communicate openly, whether there's been a shift, whether there's been a kind of cynicism or a hardening positions that actually makes it harder now to discuss the issues that, for instance, that we're talking about here, whether it makes it harder for the Dati Tzioni communities to have rational discussions, whether they become more emotional, a little bit more irrational, or whether you still are seeing, whether you're still hopeful of that.
I will say that I must tell you, this week I was in a visit. I visited in the Shomron. There was a very nice initiative of Tzohar. About 20 rabbanim of Tzohar, we went to visit in the Shomron. It was very interesting to hear the settlement, the leaders, the rabbis living there. And I feel within religious Zionism there is a positive development, that in our days the more of the discussion is more about security and about rational considerations, and less about Piskei Halakha and Da'at Torah, etc. So even the discussion between left and right in Israel is more rational in our days, and I feel more recognized that there is the other side. I'm not so optimistic, because now, as we know, maybe some of the reasons of this situation is because I think more and more people find that the discussion between left and right within the Israeli society is less relevant, because unfortunately we do not have a partner on the other side, and therefore even people like me that in the past were more supportive to the peace process understand in our days that from the rational point of view, seeing the reality, unfortunately we do not have a partner on the other side, therefore there's no way that we can do something that will find a solution in the near future. I'm very worried about what it means, but we, from the point of view of the Israeli society, it means that more and more people understand that doing such a thing like this, that's good, you cannot do without a great agreement within Israeli society, and it should be with a very, very massive support to do such a thing, and the reality in Yehuda Shomron is take to a point that is irreversible point. There is no any way that you can ignore the reality that established there. We have so many shuvim and settlers living in the place. It makes the solution even more complicated. So from the point of view of the state, I'm not so optimistic. I don't know what it means in the near future, and how long the world will exist this situation that we still keep the territories. Right now, we can still in any way blame the other side, and this is our mazal, that our fortune, that on the other side there is such a leadership that is so irrational and so extreme that they don't recognize our basic right to have a Jewish state, and therefore we can justify the other side to the fact that there is no agreement. So even I'm not so I'm quite worried about the state, about the situation regarding the state, but regarding the siyach, the discourse within Israel society, I think more nowadays there's more openness and understanding to the both sides that this kind of solution and any kind of action will be based on a vast majority and a very wide agreement within Israel society. So this is my last word, and I just have to apologize that I have a shiur that I have to go. Rabbi, I will thank you very much for until this point.
Zarabak, hold suit.
Thank you, Rav Gilad.
Thank you, Rav Gilad.
Rav Feuerstein, I just wanted to close with you on the issue of dialogue in Israel that we've been talking about here. What is your impression of the level of discussion? Is rational dialogue becoming more difficult, or are people more amenable now to discussing issues in a serious way? And I also wanted to ask you a separate question, which is that Rav Gilad pointed out that he feels there's no partner on the other side for peace. If such a partner did emerge, would that create an actual crisis for religious Zionists? Would it create a crisis because now you could no longer say that trading land is irrelevant because there's nobody to trade it to? Now, if you had an actual partner to trade it to, would that create an ideological crisis within religious Zionists?
Yeah, I can tell you that to your second question, the answer is yes, with capital letters. And yes, and I think we made many mistakes in not enough explaining that our rights on the land of Israel is not just because of the security issue, it's because it belongs to us. And I think if you listen to the discourse also of people from the right wing, the religious right wing, they are more and more talking about political issues and less about things or values which are coming from the Torah. And I think in the end, could be that from very immediate PR reasons, it's much more easy to the Israeli ear to accept such a statement, but in the long run, I think it's a mistake. I think there are different other things that should be changed, but that's another discourse, that's another question which I think needs another 1 hour to begin with. It's not an ending question. About the dialogue which is inside Israeli society, yes, my feelings are that if you know the how to create a dialogue, you can hear and get and accept more and more and more and more understanding and acceptance of, and I'm in many forums of dialogue between, and that's what Sohar is doing, trying to create dialogue between different parts of the Israeli society, and yes, I feel that there is more.
But you have to know the rules, and that's a little comment to what Rav Mishlov said before. You know, I wouldn't. I also, and it was for me a dilemma, but I felt the need to talk against the letter of rabbis in my private name, not in the Tzohar name. I'm emphasizing this point, it's very important, as a private individual Rav. But I felt that when somebody throws a bomb, you cannot be quiet. You have to talk with your colleagues before you throw the bomb. And I think if they would talk, and if there was listening, and the outcome, and I'm sure I talked with some of the people who wrote the letter, they pushed somebody like me to the corner. And I felt that, like Rav Gilad, could use my rabbinical identity, that it's a shame to be a Rav, because that's not the way that Rav is talking, in a way which is not sophisticated and takes in account all the different sensitivities. You know, I just came from the United States, and I learned that the letters of the rabbis got a title in the Wall Street Journal. That's the way which we want to present, the way we understand things, etc., etc. I think it's a great mistake. But I think if you know the how to create a dialogue, if such a letter was more a dialogical letter, which takes in account what's happening today in Israel, talks about different things, it could be much more accepted and be part and contribute in a positive way to the dialogue. But if you don't understand the, you know, you can say, I hate politically correct, I don't want, I hate PC. Okay, but that's a reaction. But if you know how to say what you want, say exactly what you want, but package it in a way that that people can listen to you and be influenced by you, you are in a different place. So yes, there are today more and more possibilities for dialogue, but there are some rules for a constructive dialogue.
Part of the sophistication you mentioned earlier, Rav Feuerstein, that Rabbanim need to have, includes an awareness, I agree with you, that things we say here may reach very, very far away, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Los Angeles Times, and all around the world. Rabbanim are not sufficiently aware of that. I wasn't suggesting only that you not that one not speak up now, but I'm suggesting that we have some kind of forum. Till it gets going, it'll be a little while. But after it gets going, you might find, indeed, that Harav Eliyahu might raise the question for discussion in the group, and together we might work out something that would be agreeable to all of us. I think that's something that certainly can be gained by speaking together. One last word in relation to your question, Dr. Malamuth. I believe that indeed there is more dialogue today, and I have perhaps an unusual way to indicate that. I follow many of the talkbacks on a variety of sites, on a variety of issues. And frankly, the talkbacks in the last year or two or three have been gradually becoming more serious, more respectful, and more to the point. And some very interesting conversations go on in the talkbacks, including talkbacks about this letter and about Rav Lichtenstein's response and about Rav, etc., etc., etc. The talkbacks that go on in response to these things are very, very informative, and I think they indicate that there is a growing ability of people to speak with each other. Perhaps we still need to listen some more, but I think to speak respectfully and to the point, yes, that seems to be growing.
On behalf of Torah in Motion, I want to thank you both, Rav Feuerstein and Rav Meshulov, for a very interesting conversation. Shabbat shalom.
Shalom, shalom uvracha.
Jake Hellman, Elliot's partner here in Toronto at Torah in Motion. I want to thank our speakers and Elliot and all our technical people and all the listeners for having a important, serious discussion that we have to continue in many ways and forms. I want to give a yasher koach to all of you, and thank you very much. And yasher koach to Elliot for running it, and all the best. Have a yom tov, and
Shalom.
Thank you. Shalom.